go.
This is like what's the beginning up? Of an episode of like Catfish on MTV. No, normally I'm in my kitchen, you know? In my underwear. That's an admission that you should know about now. And now we're here. Like, describe what this room looks like, Alex, as we walk into this.
Well, it's got some really nice carpet, tapestries on the wall. Help out.
This is like, what, 40-foot long conference table? Dude, we made it. The Super Bowl.
That grunt is the sound of a long-distance relationship suddenly becoming real close-up on the brink of Super Bowl Sunday in Los Angeles. Where I am right now, alongside Alex Smith, to break down the Bengals and the Rams from his incredibly unique vantage point as our quarterback who has seen and done pretty much everything. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, February 11th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So we're recording? We're good? So Alex, we've done somewhere between 15 and 18 and 1,000 post-game, late Sunday night episodes
yep.
from across the country. And here we are, man. I'm staring into your eyeballs in a way that...
You're so old-fashioned.
I know. You know? I'm a gentleman.
This is like... it is so weird. Like, I mean, between the logistics of us like coordinating the production, obviously, the entire season from across the country. Like, I've been traveling around. You've been traveling around. We're like, it's makeshift, like getting the microphones, getting all the Zoom stuff set up. Like, there's a lot to it from the technology side. And then it's like... Now, this is pretty easy. Just show up and we're right here and, you know, and we actually get to have a conversation.
Yeah.
But it's good. Not that the other ones weren't great, but.
Well, no, I mean, what those were the prelude to climactic.
You got to take it slow with me, Pablo.
I know. It's like one of those TikToks. It's one of those TikToks, though, where it's like two guys who've been playing video games for the entire pandemic finally meet each other in person.
Yeah, no doubt.
And there's like, we hugged. I mean, I felt the warmth, Alex. I'm going to throw it out there. I want the audience to also bathe in what I'm feeling right now, which is interpersonal interaction, which I don't have enough of lately.
You and me both. I mean, I'm looking forward to this. I just got in for everybody that's listening. Like, I literally just got to LA and I'm pumped. Like, Super Bowl is this... Even as a player, like, it sucks you're not playing in it, obviously. But just to come down, like, the entire league here is here. It's the culmination of, and this year, an amazing season. There's so much energy. It's obviously awesome to have it here in LA. It's sunny and warm.
But there's also, like, to your point, there's like this is the industry sort of like networking, converging on one spot.
Yeah, you see so many friends.
And it's like a high school reunion
yes.
aspect, I imagine, for you.
Totally.
Too.
Like, these guys that you've played with over the course of your career, even going back to, like, college. And then to come here and see them, and then you run into people you don't expect either. Like it's an awesome kind of thing to be a part of. Obviously, we missed it the last, you know, certainly
yeah.
last year with COVID, and I think it's nice. I think that a slow return to normal and to be back here and it's the most obviously culminating and like the most awesome sporting event in this country.
The cultural event that America has. I mean, for better and for worse, by the way, but this is it.
This is it. And I love that I read that the city of Cincinnati is not having school on Monday.
That's right.
And I'm like, why is the Monday after the Super Bowl not a national holiday?
You know
what?
I
mean, can we finally get this done? Who do we need to call and get this done?
We're currently gesturing at our producers yes. in the room with us, and they're all nodding yes. their heads like very vigorously. We would also like the day off after that.
Makes too much sense.
So look, for me, like, I leave New York. It's getting bomb cycloned. I just want the sun and the vitamin D. And that's more than enough. I've loved my week in LA.
I imagine for you, though, on top of all of the standard, like, man, a lot of people here that I recall and sort of vaguely recall, there is the weird thing of, like, you've been to a Super Bowl before, but under circumstances that are, I mean, suboptimal is the adjective I'll use, but, yeah. like, you very famously got hurt
yeah.
in the 2012 season in November against the Rams, as it happens.
Yep.
And even more famously, Colin Kaepernick becomes the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. There's that whole saga. But you were there during Super Bowl week, presumably. What was your experience like?
You know, it's funny because I took part of all these iconic things you kind of dare to dream about, right? Like taking part in the Super Bowl, the media day and
Radio
all the
Row.
Yeah, Radio Row, all the festivities around this event and the 2 weeks lead, you know, the build up and the travel and accommodations. And, you know, we were playing in New Orleans. It was like spectacular, you know, opportunity. And with all that, yeah, like it was, you know, I still had a C on my jersey from when I was the team captain, you know, and it was just awkwardly not playing. And yeah, and Cap had gone on this historic run at that point, yep. like lit the world on fire. We're at the Super Bowl, you know, we were at the NFC Championship the year before. I felt like, you know, selfishly, you feel like the guy that had been warming up the slot machine. And then I got up for a second and then like someone sat down and hit the jackpot.
Sure.
You know, so it was frustrating in a lot of regards, but.
And by the way, you had suffered a concussion.
Yeah.
So like this was a rule thing, like you had to sit and then Cap goes on the run. And so the slot machine is shooting gold coins yeah. into the sky as yep. you're being a good teammate watching.
Yeah, it was, and it, you know, like just incredibly conflicted in that, right? Like selfishly, you can't help but think like, how did this happen? I felt like I'd put in all my time as a young player with the Niners. You know, I don't know how Joe Burrow did this turnaround in 2 years. It took me seven to get to an NFC Championship game. You know, and I felt like I'd endured. I'd learned so much. There's so many ups and downs and things that I'd gone through. And then I felt like I was finally, you know, taking off. And I led the league in passer rating that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then like whatever week it was, you know, boom, concussion. And again, yeah, Cap goes on this just like crazy run. I mean, it still holds records. Like that Green Bay playoff game.
One of the greatest games I've seen.
Absurd. I still don't think they know who had the ball half the time on those running plays. Like Clay Matthews.
Unstoppable.
Clay Matthews running around. Not, you know, Cap's taken off for these like 60-yard runs.
Kaepernick keeps it. Fooled everybody. Colin Kaepernick. What a game. Touchdown.
Yeah, and then we're at the – then again, yeah, we're in New Orleans. We're at the Super Bowl, and it's like – it's this, you're sitting there watching. You're a spectator. Again, I'm a spectator. The only time, you know, I did pregame warmups. The only time I stepped on the field was for the coin toss. I went out there. I was a captain.
Oh, man.
You know, but like Cap rolled with it. And obviously it was the infamous blackout game. And
Alex, you're describing like someone who was about to get married and suddenly winds up like the best man, maybe?
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. And it was like, I think for me though, the things I'd learned prior to then, it was so funny, like, I spent a lot of time early in my years really distracted. Like I had so much anxiety about being the number one pick, the weight that carried. I felt like I was a 20-year-old kid and I really didn't, I thought I had to be a franchise quarterback right then. Like I thought I gotta be Joe Montana and Steve Young and Peyton Manning all in one right now, you know? And I really never let myself take part in the process of developing into that. And I thought I had to be perfect. I was like terrified to make mistakes. And it kind of became this paralyzing thing like a dark cycle for me, you know, of self-doubt and bad self-talk. And
yeah.
I didn't like, and I finally, like, I felt like after years, I like dug myself out of that, you know, and here I was taking off and then wham, I get kind of, you get hit with this. And for me, it was a little bit of a test of like, what was I going to do in that moment, right? Like, was I going to be distracted again? Was I going to have the, you know, like the pity party? Or was I going to do everything I could to be ready for like whatever my next opportunity looked like? And I knew I probably would get one. I didn't know what it would look like or where it would come or when, but I was kind of determined in that moment, like through things that I had learned, you know, the hard way as a young professional, that like I wasn't going to do that, right? I wasn't going to sit there and let them buy into the whole like me versus Cap thing. Like, you know, I was going to be a good teammate and I could still do my thing and get ready and try to reach my potential at the same time. And so it was a huge learning experience for me. Man, I mean, life-changing. And obviously it led, you know, I get traded a few weeks later, like
it's
after
just,
Super Bowl.
I laugh while you tell this, while you begin to tell this story, yeah. because it's like one of, I don't know, like a dozen acts that your career really had.
Yeah.
Because you're just saying you go to Kansas City and hey, Turns out there is yet another very particular, almost historic dynamic that you're navigating with Patrick Mahomes behind you. And you get to be this like Z-League, Kevin Bacon, like 6 degrees of Alex Smith. Like, wait a minute, you're connected to Colin Kaepernick and Patrick Mahomes and Nick Foles. Again, Super Bowl quarterbacks.
Yeah, no doubt. It was crazy. Yeah, because then I go there and I really felt like the proof was in the pudding. I went on like the best years of my career. We went to the playoffs 4 out of 5. I went to a bunch of Pro Bowls. Like,
you played incredibly well after many people said that this dude can't do stuff like what you did.
And I felt like it was my second chance. You know, Kansas City also had the number one pick that year, although, you know, obviously they didn't select me. But it was like a chance to take the – here they were. They were the worst team in football the year before. And, you know, we ended up making the playoffs the next year. And it was really, for me, validated, like I said, a lot of those things – that I felt like I had learned and already and kind of dealt with.
And these are the lessons that the quarterbacks that we're going to watch in this game and that the quarterbacks who wanted to be the quarterbacks in this game all had to deal with, right?
No doubt. Two former number one picks.
Well, let's talk about that because the fraternity of number one overall picks, is there one? Because it's funny when I looked it up and I was like, oh, right. Stafford, obviously, 2009, drafted by the Lions. Joe Burrow, 2020, drafted by the team he is with still, the Bengals, you in 2005 by the Niners. Like, what is there there?
I think there is a little bit. And I think it probably for all really early pick quarterbacks that go to bad football teams, there is. There's a huge pressure there, right? And you want to be, clearly they're picking number one for a reason, you know? And so the pieces around you aren't great. Oftentimes it's a brand new head coach, it's new regime. So there's all these moving pieces around you, but you want to be the guy that like comes in and stabilizes that, right? You want to be the guy that helps, turn the tide, right? Push him over the top.
Yeah, the solution has arrived, guys.
Yes, right? Like it's so funny. Not only on top of that, like it's the hardest thing to do in American sports, I think, play quarterback. You're a young kid. I was 20 when I got drafted. They're all 21, 22. You know, we're young guys.
Because the position, the job is both quarterback, which is like being a fighter pilot.
Yep.
And then also being like the CEO and the ambassador.
Well, that's the funny
and
thing.
A politician.
For sure. So you're immediately thrust into this leadership role. You know, I get drafted by the Niners. Yeah, huge expectations. I have huge expectations of myself, right? This great lineage of offense and quarterback play there. And I'm supposed to be the one in these moments in the locker room that guys are turning to and looking. And there's weight to that, right? And I think it's a process about being comfortable with who you are, be comfortable with your own style, not only of play, but as a leader. And I do think it's a different journey for everybody. And certainly you look at what Joe Burrow had gone through in college.
Yeah.
I think at Ohio State and then having to transfer and then goes to LSU and turns that around and national champion. And certainly had a couple more years in college, but I think that definitely prepared him for this. And it's no surprise that he's historic 2-year turnaround. No one, I don't think this will ever be done again, to take a team that was the worst team in football and a couple seasons later, and throwing an ACL injury in the middle of that. Like it's just crazy, and really hats off to him. And I think obviously being prepared for it. And
125-1 odds to make the Super Bowl at the start of the season, right? Yeah. And that's the Bengals.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Joe Burrow in college and the scouting report on Joe Burrow. I want to read you one of them because it has relevance to our conversation here. So The Athletic reported before that draft, before the 2020 draft, that an anonymous GM had scouted Joe Burrow this way, quote, "I have concerns. He does not have a lot of power or strength in his arm at all. Love the brain, like the short accuracy. He is Alex Smith-like."
Ooh, end the jab, quote. The jab. The jab right there. The not so subtle jab.
Well, what does that scouting report sound like to you? I mean, because there is a not so subtle jab and a knock on him that you have been familiar with. And I wonder when you watch him now, how much of that actually seems to have manifested in ways that you have noticed.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's obviously a compliment to hear that quote back. By whatever scout, anonymous scout that was. So thank
anonymous
you.
GM, yeah, anonymous no GM. Less.
So no, but I do think it does speak to what makes Joe Burrow so intriguing, and also to this whole draft process. We love the NFL draft. I mean, the NFL draft is this spectacular, amazing thing. College football is obviously awesome in its own right, and here we get to see this on display.
Casting call, meat market, all of it.
Of the draft. And so... But as a draftee, you have no say where you go, right? Like you're just along for the ride, you know. And there's so many variables outside of your control. But I do think with Joe, he does illustrate, like, again, I mean, I think he's put on display his physical attributes. The guy can throw the rock, can run around. He's a great athlete. But I think football and playing quarterback is so much more than that. And in a year where we lost the greatest to ever do it, or you just stepped away, and his greatness wasn't because of his physical attributes. Tom Brady isn't the greatest necessarily because of his physical attributes. It's so much more than that. And a lot of it are the immeasurables, those intangibles, and it's upstairs. And Joe Burrow, I think, falls right in line with that. And again, so we love to get up the underwear Olympics at the combine and talk about these guys and their things and their measurables.
Did you medal in the underwear Olympics?
You got to do pretty well if you go number one.
That's what I'm saying.
That's like the crazy thing, you know. But again, it playing quarterback is about way more than that.
What does the arm strength critique sound like to you? Because that's still a thing, by the way, because again, we're comparing him to Mahomes and Josh Allen and Stafford. We'll get to these guys with ICBMs attached to their torsos.
I think there's a threshold. And in the sense that, do you have an arm that limits an offense, right? Or can you make all the necessary throws in an offensive playbook? And clearly Joe Burrow can make all the throws in an offensive playbook. Like, you know, deep out to the field. Can he push the ball vertically? Can he put enough zip on it at times when he needs to? Yes. Can he throw it 80 yards like Josh Allen? No, but is that ever really required of you as a quarterback playing and play out? So I think, again, there's a threshold you need to meet as a quarterback to be a franchise quarterback. Clearly Joe has that. Anything beyond that is really kind of useless, to be honest. You know,
at some point, it's the thing of like, man, your engine on your car, you're not actually using that.
Yes.
You live in like a nice suburb. Like, why are you trying to drive?
Yeah, you can't go that fast. You know, like there are no plays. There's no defensive lines where you get to drop back and hold it for 12 seconds and throw it 80 yards.
Yes.
You know, like it just doesn't happen. It's definitely not going to happen for Joe Burrow on Sunday.
No, so full disclosure here, one of the people sitting at this table is Aaron Vail, a Bills fan, and Josh Allen has done magical things within magical time frames that make him exceptions to the rule we're describing.
Yep.
But the idea that Joe Burrow compensates using, what is it? Is it just speed of processing? As a guy who had to do something like this, is it your brain? Is that what you refer to?
I would say, I guess this, I don't think Joe Burrow has to compensate for his arm. I think his arm is strong enough. So I think that's what I guess I'm trying to say. But I do think he makes up that winning edge that we're talking about absolutely is all upstairs. And it comes in a lot of ways, whether it be preparation. But I do think Joe, like for a young guy, is really displayed, I think, especially here through the playoff run, like an ability to find different ways to win, like dissecting defenses, knowing how to attack them, knowing, you know, there's such a little chess match there, knowing where you're vulnerable. I think he's done such an amazing job not turning the ball over in some of these situations.
But to do that in his second year after having his own catastrophic leg injury is jarring.
No doubt. I mean, again, like I can't get the image back in my head. I was standing on the sidelines when he did his knee exploded. It was nasty. You know, sometimes you see these ACLs where it's a guy like cuts and
Alex,
it kind of looks funny.
I feel like when you say something is nasty, that should tell a lot of people about how nasty this injury might have been.
It was gruesome, and it's been amazing to see him obviously put that to rest and even then some, because he's so awesome. He's so great for football. And again, I do come back. It's what we love about football, again, is like this thing with him. Joe Cool, all the Knicks name.
Well,
Joe Burr. Like,
the confidence.
Like, what is it about him, you know?
Cool to me is this thing that, and this is unsurprising if you knew me in grade school, cool and what it is to be cool is a thing that I've been sort of obsessed with as a concept for a long time.
Yep.
I'm just fascinated as to who gets decreed to be as such.
No, for sure.
But unanimously, Joe Burrow seems to be a guy with a truly, for me at least, personally unrelatable level of self-confidence.
I agree, because like I think on a couple levels. For one, just from a strict football stance, he's a guy that led the NFL in sacks. He got sacked 9 times against Tennessee.
Looks, and Burrow is dropped. Sack after sack after sack.
We've talked about this hit meter, and it's real. Like when you get hit as a quarterback, your clock gets turned up. You start looking around. You get sacked a few times. Like these things have an effect. You get sacked 9 times in a game as a quarterback, and you keep your cool. Like that is hard to do as a second year guy.
I think of like that line they say in like presidential elections. Who do you want answering the phone at 3 a.m.?
Yes.
I want the guy who doesn't panic when he's getting thrown onto the ground by mountain ranges of men 9 times in a game.
I'm not sure you'd pick the guy that would wear those sunglasses that Joe wears.
Yeah, the rectangular. That's what I'm saying.
Or
like, man,
the chain. But that's also what I think kind of makes him endearing. You know, that like, again, he's so comfortable in his own skin. And again, for me, I juxtapose that Like, I remember me, like, starting out a young kid. Like, it took me several years. No, I didn't have that confidence at all. And it took me several years to even, like, you know what I'm saying, to get comfortable with who I was and as a player and a person. Like, you know, and it's fun to watch a young kid like this that has that, and it's special. And again, I think it's cool that I think that the country gets to recognize that.
Well, he doesn't lose big games. That's the myth. I mean, this is why.
Yeah, he's won an elimination game, right?
Right, since LSU. Like, this is why the coolness can withstand the fashion decisions occasionally. But okay, so, I mean, for those who are less familiar with just the Matt Stafford experience, maybe, you know, because he was sort of toiling in Detroit for a while, how would you describe his arm and what makes him a particular kind, because you competed against him a bunch. Yeah, what makes him a distinctive quarterback?
It's so funny. I mean, because then again, to go back to the draft, and you don't get any say in it. And here's Matthew Stafford, and gets drafted to Detroit, and essentially football purgatory for the last 12 years.
I think you know, some may argue that it was just straight up hell. Yeah, but purgatory is fair.
And he's emerged out of this. You know, after 12 years. He's emerged out of this and come to sunny Southern California and has flourished. And he and good for him. He is one of the toughest quarterbacks, I think, in the NFL, and he doesn't get enough credit for that.
He doesn't
play in primetime. Like, you know, like, they don't know. Right, there's a lot of country that doesn't necessarily know about him, and I think that's a tragedy.
Travesty, sorry, I combined tragedy and travesty right there. I think that's an appropriate portmanteau. I mean, he is a tragic figure who also has been going through some things that no quarterback should ever want to go through, like playing through a broken vertebra at one point, speaking of the tragedy of all of it.
And I think that can beat you down, you know, and there's a lot of guys, I think, that wouldn't come out of that like him, and to see him, you know, I think to still have his spirit about him, his competitiveness, his positivity. You know, I got to sit down with him earlier this year. Like, I'm such a big fan of his. I think he has been incredibly prolific as a passer, like historically prolific.
His numbers are off the chart.
And, you know, here finally getting to play on a big stage and display how especially talented he is, you know. And again, he is the guy with the howitzer. Matthew does have an absolute cannon of an arm. I mean, he's a guy that and can do it a lot of different ways.
Arm angle stuff too, right?
Crazy talented. Yeah, I mean, he's like, he not only is he like the, to put it in baseball analogies, like, yeah, he can throw the 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but he's got a lot of other pitches, man. He can throw the breaking ball. He can throw the changeup. Like, this guy can do it all. Really creative with his arm. Incredibly smart. You know, when talk about processing, like, obviously he's got it. And when you can throw the football like that, when you play with that kind of anticipation and timing, especially from dropping back in the pocket, like, it's just rare. And it's cool to see him coupled with Sean McVay, because I think it's so funny. You know, Sean McVay, here he is, this, you know, he lit the world on fire when he came here to
LA.
Boy
genius.
Yeah, and it was this, you know, he's this, the next Bill Walsh, and he's running this offensive system that's taking the NFL by storm. And it all starts with the run game. It's not designed to get behind the chains. It's not designed necessarily to play these amazing defensive fronts. And I think this all started a couple years ago when the Rams lost to the Patriots. They played a really good defensive front.
It's one of the ugliest. I was there, by the way, in person for that one, 13-3. Just like, seemed like this boy genius had just failed the test that he was supposed to ace.
They barely had 250 yards of offense. They couldn't run the football, and so they couldn't pivot. And I think that really kind of started putting this all in motion, to be honest. In the last couple years, I think that was obviously the motivator to go get Matthew. Matthew's strength is to drop back and throw the football, and he's a guy that can do it at a Hall of Fame level. And I think we've seen them finally put that together this year, and I think this playoffs has really been a cool little, you know, microcosm of it. And again, I think the ability to pivot when you play these really good defenses, especially up front, that they can pivot and, like, okay, you want to load the box? Like, well, then we can go do this, and we got the guy to go do it now. And it's amazing that it's worked out. They gambled. They've been really aggressive, and Matthew's got him here the last 2 weeks. They've really put it on his back, and he's delivered.
All right, Alex. After this break, a live in-person break, we're going to talk about those defensive fronts in this game and what it's like. We do this to you all the time, but yeah, tell us again what it's like to, you know, get sacked by the people in question.
Yeah, can't wait.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So the Rams' defensive line, I mean, if we're talking about these mountain range men, Aaron Donald is not that, right? He is not as big as he plays. How would you describe Aaron Donald as someone who has, I don't know, been hugged by him a couple times in the backfield?
Yeah, I mean, I think by normal human standards, you would see him and be like, that's a big guy. But like when you put him on an NFL field next to his peers, especially interior D linemen, yeah, he's like, he's almost like pocket Hercules, you know, like it's kind of funny. Like it shouldn't work out that way. And he's like a ball of muscle. He's not very tall in stature, obviously. He's not like crazy heavy, big.
Right. He's 6'1". He's just
this, yeah. And he's just this like tightly wound ball of muscle. And he's like all muscle and he's quick and you just can't block him. And he pillars this ridiculous defensive line, right? And they went and got former Super Bowl MVP Von Miller, Leonard Floyd's on the other side, who's in his own right a great player. And this has been the talk the last 2 weeks. I think the moment we knew these two were playing against each other, here you are. You have one of the biggest weakness for the Bengals as a team is their offensive line.
Yes.
And the biggest strength maybe of the Rams is their D line. And it's like, how is this going to play out?
Yes. Right? Unstoppable force against an extraordinarily movable object.
Yes. Like what, how is this going to work? What's this going to look like? But the funny thing is you go turn on the tape of the Bengals and especially their run here to get in and they've played good D lines every single week. Like going even back to the Raider game, like Joe Burrow was under duress that entire game and they still found a way to win. I mean, he got sacked 9 times against Tennessee. They found a way to win. Last week or 2 weeks ago against the Chiefs, same thing. And he's just pulling out these miraculous, you know, getting out of Chris Jones tackles. And he looks like a running back there. You know, huge third down scrambles in the fourth quarter. And they found a way to win. And so here it is on the biggest stage, probably the biggest test.
The Von Miller question, Alex, right? So they add him and what he does. You know, again, we've given Aaron Donald the pocket Hercules sort of designation. And I buy it. What is Von Miller? Because I don't know how... I don't know if you remember how often he has sacked you in your career.
Is it a lot? I try to forget those.
9 career games, 8 sacks.
8 sacks.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You know him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd get ready and play him twice a year there when I was in Kansas City. And it's like.
Yes, exactly.
He was just a game wrecker. He is a game wrecker off the edge. And I mean, I asked the Carolina Panthers.
Got into him. The ball is out in the end zone. And it's recovered by Malik Jackson for the touchdown. It was Von Miller with the strip sack.
Like he single-handedly wrecked that game in the Super Bowl. And he can do it, you know, just like that. Like those guys, you can be blocking them 98% of the time. And all it takes are those two plays. And it's a sack fumble, you know, huge moment in the game. And he's similar to Aaron Donald in this regard. And he's like, same thing. He's just this like all muscle off the edge. He's not a huge guy. This isn't Julius Peppers on the end coming around, but he's just, man, slippery duck dive, incredibly strong. And again, like all he takes is one little slip up.
What do you tell your offensive line before a game like this as regards these threats to your well-being.
You know, the funny thing is I think these guys all feast on that passiveness sometimes. And it's so funny because offensive line in passing situations, you literally are passive. You literally back up.
Yes, you're on your heels.
You're literally just trying to like hold on for half a tick longer.
Which is why like O-linemen love running the ball.
Yes, they love running the ball. But you do have to throw the ball. The Bengals love to throw the ball. And so obviously there's going to be a lot of this. So you're literally retreating as soon as you snap the ball and trying to like hold on at the same time. But there still has to be an aggression there, right? Like I still think you have to play with an edge when you're doing that. And when you've got to match these guys' intensity and edge, right? Like they're coming at you with that kind of tenacity. I think you, even though you're pass setting, you do kind of have to bring it a little bit and bring that physicality. You got to approach this the right way. And I think a little bit got to be pissed off if you're this Bengals offensive line. Especially the right side of this offensive line that's taken so much abuse.
Yes.
You know, from the media heading into this game. And yeah, you got to, and it's again, it's going to have to be a little bit of everything. Like they from a play caller and game plan standpoint, they got to mix it up because they do have a chance. The Bengals' perimeter talent is absurd.
So explain what they have because it's like a basketball team we've described it previously.
It is. It's just ridiculous. And obviously Joe Burrow's at the center of it, the point guard. They've got two great backs. Joe Mixon's one of the best backs in football, especially catching the football out of the backfield and getting in one-on-one situations with linebackers. Samaje Perine, we saw what he did. He took the 40-yard screen to the house, which was a game-changing play versus the Chiefs. You know, their tight end's a really good player, Uzoma. Obviously, I think they're optimistic he's going to be back. He's been doing it a long time. He's kind of the one vet that you have on this team. But then at the wideout position, it's ridiculous. It starts with Ja'Marr Chase, who's been absolutely probably the greatest rookie season we've seen out of a receiver.
Played with Joe Burrow at LSU.
Yeah, I mean, their
has
connection
that.
Has only continued to get better and better. And then on the other side, T. Higgins has really emerged as a really, really dynamic player and threat and consistent. You know, the play he's had all season, especially here in the playoffs, like it's been dependable. When Ja'Marr Chase is getting doubled, They can go over there to T. Higgins and he's going to win one-on-one. And then inside, Tyler Boyd, like he's the guy that he was their number one receiver 3 years ago. And all of a sudden now he really has found his role inside and is still a problem in there. And so all these guys, like wherever the one-on-one is, and Joe Burrow's done such an amazing job of finding it and diagnosing what defenses are trying to do to stop him. But like all those guys can take it the distance.
So Joe Burrow is fond of saying that he'll run the Ja'Marr's down there somewhere, f*** it.
Yeah.
You know, that play.
Everyone knows that mean. You know, F it. Ja'Marr's down there somewhere. I'm going to just throw it up to him. He's going to make a play.
As someone who has enjoyed wide receivers in his career that have that ability to just take it and just go, throw it wherever, is that literally what you're doing? Or is that like a joke?
With those special guys, it's like that amazing. Like when it's just like, just give them a chance and they're gonna come down with it. And I've only played with a few, but like even in my early years, like we would get Vernon Davis lined up on some poor safety and it was like he didn't have a chance. Like see you later.
Yeah,
and like
giant tight end.
You know, and like Kelce and Tyreek Hill were those types of guys. Like Tyreek, if they came up close to him and he had a go route on, it's like, yeah, dude, just drop back and throw it. Like it takes the thinking out of it. You know, and it's funny as a quarterback, guess what? You kinda wanna get to that kind of spot. You're not aiming it, you're not doing anything else, you just kinda let it rip. And so, yeah, Ja'Marr Chase certainly has had that. And they really love to kind of isolate him into the boundary, singled up. And it just kind of dictates what defense have to do. I mean, are you going to play one-on-one? And if so, you're probably in for it all day. And if you're going to double him, and then obviously it leaves all these other guys singled. And so that's kind of been their formula, especially the back half of the season and into the playoffs. So another obviously leads to another big, interesting matchup. Like, what are the Rams going to do? Are they going to stick Jalen Ramsey on him and let him play one-on-one? Are they going to double him over the top with the safety? You know, it'll be interesting to see.
So we've had a couple of weeks of distance now from the Chiefs-Bengals game, the AFC title game, where afterwards we were both puzzling through what exactly this Bengals defense did to Patrick Mahomes and that offense, which you know as well as anybody. What have you learned since you watched that game and maybe revisited that game about what Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator of the Bengals, has been doing such that they pulled that off and will try to pull it off against a Rams offense with Cooper Kupp and, you know, Matthew Stafford and these dudes, Odell Beckham Jr. Like, what have you learned about that?
You know, I think it was a great, for me, like a kind of illustration of patience. Like in that first half, they weren't, it's not like the Bengals were pressuring the Chiefs a ton. They, in fact, they weren't. They were playing a lot of coverage, a lot of drop eight. That was kind of their game plan going into it. But so only it wasn't working. Yeah. Only rushing three guys, but it wasn't working. Both those first touchdowns were Patrick Mahomes running around. You remember the one was like the he did the 180 in the pocket and runs out and then hits Kelsey and then he hit Tyreek. Like they were these scramble off rhythm plays, which is kind of how you combat a three-man rush. Like you hold onto the ball. That's what like Tom Brady was great at forever. You know, like if you want to rush three, fine, I'm going to hold onto the ball and move around and we'll make plays off timing, you know? And Patrick was doing that in the first half. The Chiefs were doing that. And it's like he went into halftime, obviously down 11. And the Bengals, it's so funny. It's not like they gave up on their game plan, but they made some great little adjustments. And one of the big ones was kind of putting a spy on Patrick Mahomes. And this was the Hubbard play at the end of the game, but they did it all game. And so you drop out a defensive lineman, you know, and he's kind of dropping into a linebacker role, but he's also kind of spying on Patrick Mahomes. And so then once the scramble started, he triggers. Well, what happens on a three-man rush is oftentimes when the guards don't have a D lineman to block, well, as soon as they pass it, they go look for the defensive end. They go look to double team. Well, if you can picture this, if I'm making a good illustration, you leave these giant gaps next to the center then. And when all of a sudden it's like a free rush for Sam Hubbard, like untouched. And it was just a great little adjustment that they did. And so it's like, it's funny. He almost like doubled down on this game plan into the second half and it worked for him masterfully. Like it was ridiculous. The Chiefs got really impatient. You know, they couldn't go back to the run game. They couldn't go back to throwing
it
underneath.
They looked so lost,
incredibly
Alex,
rattled
that I wonder, does any of that apply to what could happen in this game? Or is that a one-off sort of a strategy in your mind?
I think that was kind of been the strategy against the Chiefs all year. It was the talk, obviously, of the slump earlier in the year that they couldn't kind of combat this style of a defense, a bend but don't break, don't give up the big play, make them go the distance. They just, you know, they can't do it, and they can't do it sustainably.
But against the Rams, you see a different game plan?
I do, just because I go back to this the nature of how the Rams are built. Like that Sean McVay, the foundation of this offense is to run the football.
You can't have a three-man front against the Rams.
Yeah, it's to run the
attack.
Football. Yeah. And they're going to make you stop the run. They're going to come out and they're going to test that early. And the Bengals have been pretty decent against the run thus far this year. And they have some good players up front. And I think they're not going to let you sit back in two high safeties and drop eight. It's just not going to happen. And then they've got one-on-ones outside, right? They've got OBJ one-on-one, who's played amazing in this playoff run.
So well.
They move Kupp, obviously, around and get him matched up. We've really seen the evolution of that offense with Matthew since he's come here, and they have the ability to kind of be a bit of a chameleon, you know, depending on how the game's going, and they can go in and out of these different looks. And that's something that the Chiefs, like, they don't have that. You know, I think it's all gas with the Chiefs. Like, it's, you know, like, I think here with the Rams – they have the ability to counterpunch because of that run game.
Okay, so the passing of time brings us to a milestone that I do want to celebrate with you here, because we don't talk about like the Project 11 phase of your life and your leg on this podcast, because everybody should go watch the podcast and the documentary that was made about that does that so well. But it's been a year as of this week that you won Comeback Player of the Year because of like what you went through with your leg.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how it's just, dude, I just can't believe you were playing football last year, having gone through this season with you. And I'm just wondering how you mark the occasion this week, given that all this is happening right now.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, it hit me too. I saw an advertisement for the NFL honors, which are tonight. And it did hit me. I was like, man, that was a year ago. Feels like 5 years ago, but it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I think, you know, for those that don't know out there, like, yeah, like where I was, you know, in a wheelchair, couldn't walk, still talking about amputating my leg. I mean, half my leg was missing at that point. Still, like the prognosis was maybe I'll be able to stand, you know, maybe walk a little bit. Like that was it. And I mean, obviously all the psychological stuff that comes with that for me that I felt like I had to process and deal with. But then, I mean, I'd be lying if I said, even when I was chasing this thing, I never really thought it would happen, Pablo. Like, I never thought I would actually get there. Like, I wasn't scared to fail, but I really didn't think. Like, I just thought it would end way before I ever put cleats on and a helmet back on. Mm. And I'm so lucky and grateful that it just kept going, that the steps kept, like, you know, revealing themselves one step to the next. Like, as I was able to get onto my feet and start to walk again and learning to run and jump again. I'm just so grateful that it kept going, you know, and to the point where then, yeah, like all of a sudden it was crazy. Like I remember like, well, I'm going to go see if I can go drop back and throw, you know, like as absurd as that is after everything I had been through. And to actually, as terrified as I was when I ran out onto that field in front of everybody, like, because it was so unique. There was no preseason. And so right. I'd never been tackled. Like quarterbacks wear bright yellow jerseys in practice. Like we don't get touched. And so there's, I'd been practicing a little bit. And so I kind of knew like I potentially could go do this, but I still hadn't been tackled. And that was still just sitting there in the back of my head that if my leg was, because the last time I did it, I ran out there, my leg crumbled, my leg shattered, you know? And here I am, I'm like intentionally running back out there again. Like that's crazy. And so the mental process to go do that and then do it in front of everybody, because I didn't have preseason or practice to do that, like in privacy, like it was in front of everybody. Yeah. It was like crazy, you know. It was just life changing for me. Again, I'm so thankful that I got to go through it and experience it, because I really do. The rest of my life's gonna be better off for it. This last year has been absolutely amazing. I don't feel like I have limitations. You know, I have to adjust from the moment I wake up and get out of bed. My life is an adjustment, and I'll never get what it was before back. Like, but I don't feel like there's anything I can't go do. And I don't, and to have shed that like weight, because I felt like I lived with that for several years, you know, of like, what was my life going to be like? Will I ever be able to go do these things again? And to have that kind of doubt and to have built up those mental walls and barriers. And I got Aaron Donald to thank a little bit to help break those down, you know, and it's funny, right. But it's
the
like
training
the truth.
Wheels,
it
yeah.
is the truth.
Some pressure. And there's the first time Alex Smith is hit as he's taken down and sacked. Aaron Donald once again, the disruptor. And a timeout taken here as Alex Smith thankfully does pop up and jogs off okay.
You know, like to have shed a lot of that, all of that, you know, and was amazing. And that's really why I came back to play. As crazy as it was like for the rest of my life, and the rest of my life will be better because of it. And again, I'm thankful, obviously, that it got to go that far, that I'm lucky. I'm incredibly lucky.
Alex, I mean, when I saw you walking down the hallway in our meet cute rom-com moment that we started the show with, like you were walking as if no one could ever possibly guess that you were almost killed by the injury that almost took your leg from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. It's funny how like this is my normal, right? You adjust. And we're incredibly resilient. And for me, it was about finally looking forward, you know, and I spent a long time in the wheelchair and in a walker with a cage bolted to my leg, like staring in the rearview mirror of my life and wondering and picturing all these things I'd never be able to do again. And thankful for the people around me, especially the military involved, that helped me kind of pivot and look forward. And like, I'm not thinking about any of that stuff behind me anymore. And I'm going to go find out what I can do. And I'm excited about the challenge.
Well, I want to go find out if we can ride Space Mountain. So are you interested?
Let's go.
All right. Alex Smith, we're going to go to Disneyland, I think. We're going to continue to be going to Disneyland. Thank you for doing this as always, man.
Pablo, thanks, man.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Bradford Craig, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Andrea Soto, Abu Kamara, Christian Gardner, Russ Dinallo, Shayna Shavinsky, Jess Krause, Jason Jones, Max Bradsky, and Jackson Ogilo. I'll talk to you guys Monday.